Our fifth case is FedNav International against Continental Insurance.
Good morning.
Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I represent FedNav, and we are here hoping to achieve a restoration of FedNav's monetary position, pecuniary position.
Mr. Snyder, before we get very far, I have a question about the district court's subject matter jurisdiction.
Yes.
What kind of entity is FedNav International LTD?
FedNav International LTD is a corporation organized in Montreal, Canada. It's headquartered there, and it's engaged in the international transportation, marine transportation
Canadian
of
corporation.
Goods. Pardon me?
You say it's a Canadian corporation?
Canadian corporation.
We looked up the Quebec corporate records, which say it is not a Canadian corporation. They say it's a Barbados entity, and it's simply registered in Quebec to do business there. So I repeat my question. What kind of entity is FedNav International?
Well, obviously, it's a corporation organized under the laws of Barbados.
Don't say obviously. Do you know anything about the corporate law of Barbados?
No.
Barbados, of course, I don't want to say of course, but it descends from British standard organization laws in which there are two kinds of LTDs. One is entities limited by shares. They're like American corporations. The other is entities limited by guarantees, and they're treated like American limited partnerships. And since you apparently didn't even know that FedNav is a Barbados entity rather than a Canadian entity, my bet is you don't know what kind of entity it is as between limited by shares and limited by guarantee.
I know this, that it's a closely held corporation.
Many entities that are, for our purpose, limited partnerships or limited liability companies think of themselves as closely held corporations. But for jurisdictional purposes, they are not. We need to know if they're anything like a limited liability company. We need to know the identity of every investor and the citizenship of every investor in order to figure out whether there's diversity of citizenship. Now, it's possible, of course, that the Canadian corporate records, that the Quebec corporate records are wrong. But it's hard to know where the reference to Barbados came from, if they are wrong.
I can safely say this, having represented FedNav for a low 30 years, and never having had to know that those facts about Barbados. But I do know that there is no citizen of the United States that has any ownership interest in FedNav, because I know who the owners are.
I think we will need supplemental filings to figure out what kind of entity the plaintiff is, where it is organized, what the terms of its organization are, and if it is, as it could be, a Barbados entity limited by guarantee rather than limited by shares, we would need to know the names and all citizenships of every investor, and if those investors are themselves entities like partnerships or trusts, we would need to know to follow it through however many levels there are.
Understood. I believe that can be provided within 30 days, certainly.
We will order it provided within 10 days.
Within 10 days. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry to have put the court to that trouble. As I say, FedNav is seeking to be restored to the pecuniary position that it occupied before its contract with the Continentals, Subrogee, was breached. And that's all we want. We want nothing more and nothing less. Continental claims that FedNav waived the appeal of this case because it did not sufficient specificity argue the application of procedural law in the court below. However, point out that the district court applied the procedural law in dismissing Continental's three suits. That was affirmed on appeal on the basis of the venue statute, United States Code Section 1406. FedNav claimed from the very beginning of the argument against the dismissal of the case for our case for fees that the American rule did not apply. We relied only on federal cases, including the Omron case that had been decided by this court and the Illinois Laboratory case, which had been decided by the District Court of the Northern District of Illinois. And we also relied on His Honor Judge Hamilton's decision in Ball versus Versar, which includes, I think, a very specific and excellent reasoning as to why attorney fees should be awarded in breach of forum selection clause cases.
Do you think that's what I decided in Ball? I said I assume there is no legal obstacle to an award of damages and rejected the claim on other grounds.
That's right. But I think it was rejected because not because they were not entitled to it as a matter of law, but for another reason.
So it's good old-fashioned dicta.
Good old-fashioned dictum, but persuasive dictum. I would argue. Then there's Erie versus Tompkins, accepts cases based on federal procedural statutes from state rules of decision. And finally, as this court said in Moriarty versus Svec, 164F3rd 323.
Counsel, yes. I can think of three potential sources of an entitlement to fees. One would be the contract. Are you relying on the contract?
No.
The second would be the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act. Are you relying on the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act?
No.
The third would be the Carmack Amendment to the Interstate Commerce Act. Are you relying on the Carmack Amendment?
No.
Well, I'm now out of places that might authorize fees. Otherwise, you've just got the fallback American rule.
Yes, we there are exceptions to the American rule, one of which is the bad faith exception, and we argued that and we qualify for that. Continental attempted to avoid this by quoting half of what this court said in affirming the dismissal of the steel cases. They say that FedNav's articulation of a bad faith exception to the American rule itself smacks of bad faith. There was no finding by either Judge Zagel or this court that Continental filed the previous lawsuits in bad faith. To the contrary, in affirming the previous dismissal, this court observed that filing in the Northern District of Illinois was an obvious mistake. But that's misleading. This court's use of the phrase obvious mistake was not intended to be some kind of shield for Continental. Rather, it was intended as a sword, because the complete quote is this: while dismissing the suit because of a mistake that is, quote, easy to commit, unquote, might be so disproportionate a penalty as to constitute an abuse of discretion, the proper penalty for obvious mistakes that impose costs on opposing parties and on the judicial system is a heavy one. And that certainly was a heavy one. The imposition of costs on FedNav was indeed heavy. And
Did you ask for attorney's fees in the original suit?
No, we did not.
One would think, counsel, that one function of 28 U.S.C. 1927 is to prevent exactly what's happened here.
Well, we reasoned in deferring our suit for attorney fees that it was better to defer it than to press it at that time because there were 11 suits, most involving the same parties, pending in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Indiana. And we were in the process of preparing those suits for trial and are settling them and throwing a claim for $128,000 attorney fees into that mix, would I think, time is out, I gather. And thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bolson.
May it please the court, counsel. It appears that FedNav is confused with the matter of enforcing a forum selection clause. There's a difference between enforcing a forum selection clause as a matter of jurisdiction and venue. Where should the case be heard? Should it be dismissed? Should it be transferred? And enforcing it as a contractual obligation that gives right to a theory of recovery for damages. They brought this suit under the diversity jurisdiction, just a plain old vanilla suit for breach of contract. Their opposition to the motion to dismiss described it as a common law breach of contract case. They cited Illinois for law for the elements of a contract claim, and they argued that it fell within an exception to the American rule. Well, it did not fall within any exception to the American rule. The district court was correct that under Ritter versus Ritter, a private party can't recover its fees and costs from the losing party in a second suit or otherwise, unless a statute or an agreement provides to the contrary. As we've seen, counsel has identified no statute, and there's been no agreement that provides for attorney's fees. Here, for the first time, FedNav is arguing that federal procedural law or federal common law applies to this claim and supplants Illinois law regarding the American rule. But this court has held quite clearly that under Erie, state law governs claims for attorney's fees. The district court cited the Champion Parts case, and there's also the Taco Bell versus Continental case.
It's not at all clear to me why state law would govern suits for attorney's fees in federal court under federal law. The original suit in this case, although filed in the wrong forum, was first in federal court and second under federal law.
Right.
Now, state law might govern if this were a dispute about the meaning of a contract governed by state law, but it certainly looks to me like if there was a contract, and Mr. Snyder has conceded that there's no contractual provision for fees, that it would be a contract under either the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act or the Carmack Amendment. Doesn't that imply federal law?
Well, that would imply federal law, and I'd be happy to win on those grounds.
Of course, Mr. Snyder has conceded those grounds, too.
Right.
And properly so. There's just no provision for fee shifting in the Carmack Amendment or the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act.
Absolutely. Well, we've taken the position that this is covered by state law just because they have not alleged that the contract itself was any sort of contract other than just it's not a contract arising under federal law. They've just alleged standard breach of contract under diversity. Then we look to
contract for international shipment of goods. It can't be under anything other than federal law. Now, there's a dispute now pending before the Supreme Court in the Kawasaki case about whether that federal law is the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act or the Carmack Amendment for international multi-mode transportation. But those really are the only options.
Well, I'm happy that you see it that way, Your Honor. Those being the only options, then it seems that there's just no basis for any claim here. They also have a timing problem as well as a legal problem, in that they could well have brought, if they thought that this suit was frivolously brought, there's no reason that they should have not filed a motion for Rule 11 sanctions in the previous case.
I've got a question about that possibility. I was thinking about that, Mr. Balsam, and
The alleged wrong here is, let's suppose that they weren't just right across the border, but that they'd filed suit halfway across the country for you, right. from you, and that you had filed that suit halfway across the country, or maybe in a foreign country.
Barbados.
In violation of your contract with them. Would it be reasonable and fair to expect them to raise in that forum the issue of your breach, the forum that you had agreed not to be in at all?
Well, they could have.
They could have.
They
yes.
could have. And
are they required to have done so?
I don't know that they'd be required to. But
okay.
it
and
seemed.
Let me shift back to the, let's suppose that you're right and that Illinois law governs here the way that that it was briefed in the district court. Does Illinois law require that a contract specify all of the available remedies explicitly?
No.
And what other remedies would be appropriate for a breach of such an agreement under state law other than the foreseeable damages of the fees needed to get the case moved or dismissed?
Well, specific performance for one,
mm-hmm.
which they received from the district court in the last case.
But which doesn't make the aggrieved party whole.
Well, it makes them whole in the sense that they actually got, we were foreclosed from bringing our claim on the merits.
I understand your sore
so they,
argument.
So. Okay. So there is a deterrent effect to just the existence of these forum selection clauses without the added draconian element of a suit for damages on top of it. They seem to think that they are entitled to get away scot-free on their claims for the damage to the steel and not have to litigate in any court. So it seems that there's no, as a matter of policy.
That particular benefit was kind of the result of the fortuities of the way this particular litigation went. But more generally, why wouldn't fees be an appropriate measure of damages here, in addition to specific performance, to put the party in the position it would otherwise have been in but for the breach?
Well, see, that's why I would go back to Illinois law, which we made a mistake. Prior counsel made a mistake. And the purpose of the American rule is to forgive mistakes like that. There's a policy of access to the courtroom that you don't want to chill. And so you do not allow the prevailing party to recover attorney's fees from the losing party. And this just is rolled into that same policy, that the Illinois courts, to the extent they've made a judgment on this, have decided that they're going to live with mistakes like this. And as a result, they're not going to allow for damages for the recovery of attorney's fees as damages for breach of a forum selection clause. And that is a policy decision that, in our view, Illinois law applies, that the Illinois courts have a right to come to. Are there any other questions? Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.